Hey everybody, welcome to Back Issues, the only podcast that has completely run out of jokes before the 20th episode.
Really? We're all out of jokes?
No shit, better cancel it.
Actually, no. The thing is, I'm managing to make it into a meta joke. So, we've afforded one more week.
Shit, that means next week we don't have a joke. Fuck.
I'll come up with some. Don't worry.
I'm your host, Jason. With me tonight are Dick and Jamie, as usual.
Hello.
Typical guests, yeah? Well, hello. This is a good one, though. I like this one. You want to go ahead and introduce the comic for this week, man?
Yeah. Marvel graphic novel number one, The Death of Captain Marvel. One of Jim Starlin's best work, under Jim Shooter, but Shooter was a great editor-in-chief anyway. I miss Jim Shooter. But yeah, we got Starlin on art and pencils, some help with coloring and lettering, edited by Al Milgram. This is 1982. This is older than I am.
This is kind of also the one of the peaks of kind of comic books in general, from what I've heard. The 80s, I hear a lot about people talking about the 80s and how it was great for Marvel. So to be able to read something from that time period is awesome.
The 80s were great for Marvel and DC.
Yeah, it really was a highlight for comics, because they really had started to shed off the campiness and just started to go really into deep storylines. Not at all, brought forth by the death of the CCA, but, you know, that's the story.
Yeah. Now, this is Captain Marvel, not the current Captain Marvel, Carol Danvers, but the original Captain Marvel, the Kree outcast Mar-Vell. Quick intro, because Dick, I know you don't know much about the character. Mar-Vell was part of an invasionary force by the Kree, who wanted to basically scout out Earth and see would it be worth adding to the Empire and how much it would take to do so. And Mar-Vell wound up pretty much sympathizing with the humans and turned against the Kree. And over time became one of Marvel's biggest characters. He got received cosmic awareness, which is really fucking nifty. And the Nega Bands, and there's some really good storylines with Rick Jones involved. Great stuff. Now, cue Captain Marvel number 34. He's battling Nitro, a guy who's ability is basically to blow himself up. More recently, he was known for being the guy that blew up the New Warriors and started Civil War.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
Nitro has a nerve agent, and the canister gets ruptured. And Mar-Vell just instinctively grabs it and seals it by hand. What he doesn't realize is at that point in time, he gave himself cancer. It just took years to show up because of the Nega Band's photonic energy holding it at bay.
And so what's crazy about the cancer, too, is that since he's Kree, his biology is different. So it's not like, you know, your run-of-the-mill, you know, cancer where you can go get it operated on, get the tumor cut out, get some chemo, and you're good. Because his biology is physically different than people on Earth's.
And keep in mind, this is 1982. We didn't know nearly as much about cancer. And they also say straight out, because he is Kree, and Kree have always been warriors, they never took time to fight cancer on their own. They call it the Blackened. They never bothered learning to fight it through science, and their biology is vastly different from any race that has learned to cure cancer. So, long story short, Captain Marvel is given months to live.
4 months, I believe.
Yes. Now, this also... I'm not telling this in order, and I know I'm not, but... Thanos comes into play. A couple times.
Yeah, actually, it's interesting. I didn't expect it to take off after that, after the point where it does. It takes place, I think, shortly after the Infinity Gauntlet. Right?
Actually, no, God. Well, way before.
Okay, see,
Infinity Gauntlet was what, 91, 92, something 91. Like that?
91.
Yeah, okay, so what plan did they foil of Thanos' then? Because that wasn't made very clear.
Oh, shit. You're asking me to remember that far back? I think it had been one of his attempts to destroy the solar system.
Yeah, they do mention that he had attempted to destroy the entire...
the solar system.
The entire solar system, yeah.
Okay, so it's just another plan, and then he ended up basically turning into a statue.
He died, yeah.
Yeah, he died by petrification, yes.
So Mentor, who is Thanos' father, and Mar-Vell are, you know, removing Thanos' statue from the ship and plan to drag the ship out past Pluto and just kind of let it go derelict. And they get involved in a quick fight with the cult of Thanos, which is, you know, various aliens that thought Thanos was in the right. So they move Thanos back to Titan and, you know, seal him down in the crypt kind of thing. And Mar-Vell is dying this entire fucking time. And you can see him, you know, slowing down and shit.
Yeah, he actually ends up having a coughing fit after fighting the Cult of Thanos people that were there, which is unusual for him, because normally he's ready to fight for fucking ever, pretty much, from what I understand of the character. Yeah. I mean, he's also a super warrior, pretty much. So, you know, it's one of the major themes in this thing that is very interesting is it takes this idea of cancer and turns it into something approachable for the average person to be able to deal with, because... back in the time of the 80s, cancer was one of the fucking, you know, the most horrific things you could be possibly diagnosed with ever. There wasn't very good chemo, surgery didn't work all the time, you wouldn't go into remission very often, you know, it was a scary-ass fucking thing. It was your body literally turning against itself. And
it's that, still a scary thing. Out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, definitely, it's still scary, but back in the 80s, it was a lot scarier because we didn't know as much about it, you know? So it takes that idea of death and accepting death and all of these things and turns it on its ear, because it's a superhero, someone who should never die by superhero comic book logic. And that's in air quotes, because that's the stereotype.
Yeah.
It's just a very interesting way to take this social topic, this commentary that people aren't really having a serious conversation about, and make it approachable for the average person and make it makes sense in a way that, you know, everybody has to die. Although I think I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself.
Yeah. Well, all of Earth's greatest scientific minds are trying to figure out ways. Doctor Strange is trying to figure out a way, you know, both as a surgeon and as, you know, the master of the mystic arts. And the Sorcerer Supreme, you know?
Beast there.
Yeah.
Beast,
Iron Man.
Mr. Fantastic. Thor.
Uh-huh. Because keep in mind, Thor actually is a doctor.
Was it Bruce?
Yeah.
Bruce Banner? Yeah,
Bruce Banner.
Vision. Mr. Fantastic, Vision. Pretty much the literal who's who of big brains in Marvel.
Right.
Exactly.
And none of them can figure out a way to do it. So they all go to Titan. I'm not talking just those characters. I'm talking every fucking Marvel superhero goes to Titan to pay their final respects. I mean, people you did not figure would come into play came in, like the X-Men go.
Spider-Man shows up, although that makes a little more sense than the X-Men, but nonetheless, Spider-Man's there.
Inhumans are there.
Yep.
Yeah.
Fantastic Four. Some of the Defenders showed up too.
Yep. Yeah. The
Surfer showed up.
It's very much a who's who of the most popular people in Marvel at the time. I kind of want to say it's all of their headliner type people and some of the supporting characters from those headliner type comics and
fan favorites.
It's one of those things where it's like, wow, all of these people showed up. Like, this is serious, you know? And I really appreciate that, the fact that everybody shows up and comes to pay respects and everything. And it also shows one of the other themes that's dealt with very maturely and very well in this comic is the whole I have to accept that someone I love is going to die, or someone that is important to me is going to die. And I can't remember his name, but the guy that he was swapping bodies with.
Rick Jones.
Yeah. Is another fantastic. He's in this. Rick Jones, quick backstory from my very limited understanding, is that he found Negabands while Captain Marvel was put in the negative zone by some villain. The Supreme Intelligence. And so he goes and visits Rick and tells him, I'm dying of cancer. Go get checked out by the Avengers, because I don't know if you're dying of cancer either. And Rick basically just loses it. And that's most
accuses him of giving up.
That too, yeah. And that's a lot of people's reaction as well to cancer. A lot of people will be like, no, this can't happen to you. This doesn't make sense. Why are you dying? I love you. You're important to me. And it's, once again, this whole theme, the sub-theme overall of death and it being unavoidable is just very intriguing and done in such a way that it's everyone's reactions are logical and in character. Even Spider-Man's reaction to the news that Captain Marvel is dying it's spot on, and I love it.
But yeah, on top of every Marvel superhero being there, there's an intergalactic delegation sent to Titan to pay respects. They imply that every major race except for the Kree sent somebody.
And the Skrulls. Emperor of the Skrulls.
Yep.
Showed up.
To give him the Skrull Medal of Valor or something like that?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the interesting thing about that, though, you could see in a few of the pages, even the Super Skrull is on his knees in sadness. I mean, that guy is like, you know, one of the baddest villains in Marvel, and he's knocked down by it.
Well, yeah, it's literally, he's losing one of his best opponents.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, at night, he falls asleep, and he falls into a coma, rather. Cap does, and he gets one final visitor in the middle of the night, the ghost of Thanos, who gives him the strangest parting gift ever, and eases his transition into death with a final battle before revealing Death herself, who Marvel, in a really striking moment, looks at Death, and she looks like a, you know, attractive woman with a hood, and wipes his hand across her face and wipes away the illusion, you know, revealing the classic Death skull, and then gives her one final kiss and dies. And the whole thing ends with a group of Cap's closest friends and such burying him on Titan. And,
I think
yeah.
The one thing I want to point out that might confuse people is that Cap was what used to be Cap, because we're in a couple of Marvel, because a lot of people hear Captain America referred to as Cap now, and I think that was kind of something that he passed on to Captain America.
They were calling Cap back in World War II.
All right, my mind.
It's just
a word that's used interchangeably for any number of Captain characters.
What I really like about the way that this ends is even Thanos, his most hated enemy, the most intense battles that Captain Marvel has ever had have been with Thanos. He literally thwarted Thanos' plot to end the world, and Thanos respects that enough not only to cure Captain Marvel's cancer enough in probably illusion, probably not for real, that he can fight, and then brings back all the old enemies that he's defeated to fight him as well. And in a way, this last battle, this last hurrah, is almost Thanos' way of saying, look, I respect you. You still won. Even after all this time, but you gotta die. It's just inevitable. You can't not die.
And, yeah.
You know, you think you can. You think that your powers are great and everything, and that you shouldn't die. But that's just going against infinity. It's his exact words. And it's just so awesome to see how Thanos is so intelligent and smart and a decent person that he even subscribes to this idea of respectful battle. You know, this idea of that you should pay respect to your enemies because they're damn good at what they do. And in an interesting way as well, he kind of helps Captain Marvel fully accept his death because Thanos had died earlier in the earlier before that comic. And so, you know, seeing someone that just recently died to come along and be like, come, it's your time, let's go. I think that really was what helped Marvel sort of accept the fact that, yeah, it's my time, I need to go. And in addition to that, it's also recording his memoirs and everything like that. That also kind of helped him. And everyone visiting him and let him take care of all of his unfinished business in a way. But an interesting moment is he says earlier on, there's so much in this universe that I need to understand and there's not enough time.
I think that's pretty much one of the whole foundations of a lot of philosophies. There's, you know, so much to know and we're very finite beings.
Eventually going to burn out, yeah.
Yep. Parts wear down with use, entropy ensues. But yeah. I mean, the cast list on this fucking issue.
Yeah.
I mean, check some of these names. You know, we got all the big, you know, everybody you would know. But Devil Slayer. Hellcat. Fucking, literally the entire royal family of the Inhumans.
Yep.
Even a couple, you know, lesser used Avengers like Tigra and
Quicksilver's
there. Yeah, at the time Quicksilver, he had a very brief run as an Avenger.
Yeah.
I mean, it was honestly, it wasn't very brief. It was pretty fucking long, but it's just like when you compare it to people like Cap and Iron Man, who pretty much have been there since day one and every day between.
Yeah, he's a blip in the history of the Avengers.
Well, he did join real early on. I think like 16 issues in or some shit.
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't do that much notable as an Avenger except for turn against the team. It's just, there's not much meat to the, you know, the bone there. Especially when you got literally, you know, fucking, you know, Captain America, Iron Man, Thor, Wonder Man, Wasp, Yellow Jacket's actually funny though, because Hank Pym wasn't Yellow Jacket for all that long, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
No, I don't think he was.
No, he was not Yellow Jacket for very long.
He passed that to someone else. That
moniker. Eventually, it, you know how this shit goes.
Right.
15 other characters who use a name that's not in use.
Yeah.
But, I mean, even, like, Ghost Rider, a character that you'd think would have no connection.
Right.
And they're
that's
all
a really interesting one to me. Like, yeah. That's one that kind of was like a what? I mean, yeah, but what? Why are you there? Why is Nicolas Cage here? No, never mind. Nicolas Cage is not Ghost Rider. Don't quote me on that.
But yeah. And they're all these characters and they're all drawn so well. I love Starlin's art.
Dude, that was one of my favorite things about this. The pencil work, the line work is impeccable. The use of perspective is amazing. Recording all of the flashbacks for his memorandum and everything, his memoirs, were in colored boxes so that you knew that it was a different thing. Everything about this comic is designed smartly. Jim literally controlled everything from fucking, you know, pencils to the story to everything to the layout. The only person that really had a little bit more say on anything was Jim Shooter. And overall, the two of them together really, Jim Starlin was let loose, it feels like, on this. And he fucking, to use a slightly offensive way to put this, he kind of went autistic on it and literally did a great job with it. It's probably one of the best Captain Marvel comic book lines that I know of. I will admit I've not read very many storylines with them in it, but it's probably the best written out of all of them, and I could say that with confidence because it was just fucking amazing. It's brilliant. It floored me, the cleverness and just the writing and the way that this idea of death being inevitable was approached. It's a very mature look at it as well. It's not your stereotypical hero comic, you know? It's not your stereotypical, there's a bad guy, we have to defeat him. It's this very interesting way of looking at what's considered a cosmic being in the Marvel Universe and sort of dehumanizing it and turning it into this thing that will happen. She is inevitable. She is coming. She will take you when she's ready. And, you know, it's a good way to convey that message to the audience because a lot of people, myself included, are afraid of dying. I don't want to fucking die. Fuck that shit. But eventually I'm going to have to, you know?
I'm hoping I can get my brain put in a robot body.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping for, too, particularly with a 2-foot-long penis.
Yeah, I think we're a number of years too early for that. I think we're a number of years.
Born,
I don't know, man. I've been reading stuff about whether or not we could download a human brain into a computer, so...
Yeah.
Apparently we're not as far off as you'd think.
Well, I've seen robots controlled by rat brains, too, so it's only a matter of time.
Sign me the fuck up.
I know, right? but no, what another thing that's approached really well in this overall is just the way that it shows the internal conflict that happens when someone has cancer or knows they're going to die if they have a terminal disease. It shows that very well, and it paints it very clear because a lot of people, they'll get scared or upset or mad at what's going on from the outside, not knowing everything that's going on. And when we get these moments where Captain Marvel's alone, where he's on his own and reflecting on everything, whether he's, you know, on his deathbed or walking around Titan or what have you, it's very interesting to look at this and have him, you know, basically show all of this wide range of emotions that I'm sure a lot of people go through when they're dying or have someone that's going to die or, you know, something along those lines. And all of it is presented in a way that, you know, all these people are feeling all these emotions and don't understand why he's giving up or what have you. And yet he's gone through the exact same emotions and everything. And people don't seem to understand that. And it's a good way to point that out, that you may think you understand someone's suffering, but you possibly don't.
Yeah. And I think that really got also accentuated in his little argument with Rick Jones. I mean, how many times did Captain Marvel just sit there and go, you know, I've already thought of this. You know, it's obvious he's going through it as well, while Rick is just starting going through it, you know what I mean? But yeah,
Well, not only that, but Rick even is just a good look at how, you know, children and teens and things like that deal with these sort of things, because he goes to the Avengers because Marvel tells him to, and he goes in and he's like, why aren't you guys trying to fix this? Why aren't you working on this? And then gets really mad and leaves and slams the door behind him before they get a chance to say that he's going to. And everybody reflects on this for a second, and it kind of shocks them that we have all of these super intelligent people here. We have all of these geniuses with all sorts of different expertise and everything. Why haven't we tried to tackle cancer? Out of all the things that we save the universe from on a regular basis, and I mean, if you look at lame Marvel plot lines to where you have a shitty C-list hero and B-list heroes taking him out to, you know, things like events with Thanos or, you know, Galactus and things like that, it puzzles them why something as simple as cancer hasn't been something that they focused on. And I love how everyone has their own reason that they try to justify it with, and nobody finds satisfaction in those reasons because it's affecting them personally now. And it's really interesting to look at that and kind of see how not only does this whole thing bring everyone together, but it also brings out all of these things of, am I a bad person? Am I doing the right thing here? Am I doing the wrong thing? Am I actually just? You know, what it's a very interesting way to look at it.
It kind of brings me to a point that's always bugged me about comics. You got all these big brains, and they're just set on building bigger and better weapons and fucking exploring the negative zone, Why haven't they done shit about, you know, poverty?
Or cancer.
Cancer.
Or HIV. You know,
that's an interesting point. And it comes up, it's so much that Trump's put up a category for it called Reed Richards is Useless.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it asks that same question, you know, with all this intelligence in the world, you know, all these geniuses, why can't they cure cancer or end crime or any of these things? And the answer is always because, you know, not in the universe is an answer of creators. If we cure the status quo, what's the point of having heroes?
Well, that's the thing. Stories, right now. Stories are yeah. Stories are meant to end. That's the problem with comic books.
Yeah, and they don't ever end.
That's why, honestly, Jamie, read Alan Moore's Miracle Man. They tackle that. It's actually really good. In fact, Neil Gaiman helps out with it and does a few issues.
But it's really interesting, though, how Jim fucking takes a step back and he's like, wait a second. I want to do a story about cancer, so why haven't we taken care of this beforehand? Why hasn't anybody tackled this before in Marvel Comics? So even then, it's a commentary on Marvel itself, the company.
Yeah, like cancer is somehow a taboo to them.
Exactly, yeah. It's really interesting to look at that and see how even Jim is like, guys, why do we always have to write the same stories? And if you look at a lot of Marvel stories, they're pretty much the same story with the characters changed. And that's why you get all these, you know, reboots of heroes and stuff, is because, unfortunately, while the 80s was the golden times, look at us now with comics. We're in 2016 and fucking everything's gone to shit. And I think that's another thing that is a theme here, is that all good things must come to an end. And that's really what Thanos kind of shows him, you know, by having him battle all of these old enemies, all these old villains, fight all these people, you know, he goes toe-to-toe with all of them again and defeats them much easier than he probably had a time dealing with them in the actual comic lines where he deals with them.
Yeah.
And then finally it's just him and Thanos, and Thanos kind of doesn't want to fight him at that point, once he's, you know, basically destroyed everybody. In fact, Mar-Vell is so angry and so seeking justice for himself against Thanos that he literally destroys the Thanos statue in a weird sort of twist of events, because he thinks he's attacking Thanos and it's not. It's just a statue. And what I'm kind of wondering, and I want to get your guys' opinion on this, do you think Mar-Vell is already dead at that point and that's kind of purgatory?
No, I think that's, the brink of death kind of thing.
Yeah.
Life flashing before your eyes and all that?
Yeah.
As it were?
Yeah.
But that's going to be a bitch if I die and Thanos shows up and he's like, let's fight. I'll probably be fat. Fuck that.
Something occurred to me while you were saying all this, Dick. You realize Charles Xavier fucked Africa?
Oh, yeah. No, he did.
When he took Storm out.
Yeah, no, Storm could have fucking reforested Africa by herself.
She was working on it. That's why she was worshipped as a goddess.
Yeah, no, and fucking Xavier was like, well, no, we're done. You're coming with me. And it's like, no, you fucking idiot. And that just goes to show even that fucking societal standards and norms of just giving Africa aid and not actually trying to help them is even reflected in the comic book world. Nobody wants to help Africa, and it's kind of sad that nobody wants to help them develop, and that's a whole another topic for a completely different kind of podcast.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, it's
to that point, even Wakanda doesn't want to help Africa develop, and there comes a point in the Black Panther storyline where they talk about, or he asks his fellow leaders in Wakanda to give the rest of the world a cure for cancer, and they tell him to go fuck off.
Yeah. Wakanda is heavily isolationist.
Mm-hmm. In fact, he's like the only major ruler in Wakanda who wants to have anything to do with the outside world.
Mm-hmm. And yes, this has something to do with Death of Captain Marvel, because Black Panther shows up, damn it.
Actually, yeah, we forgot to mention Black Panther was one of those people working on the disease.
Yep.
That is the most tenuous connection to a comic book I think we've ever had. bad. That's even worse than fucking Seven Layers of Death or Seven Degrees of Deadpool.
Hey, I maintain that was a good segment.
That was a good segment. I'm not gonna lie, but no. Overall, though, one thing I do want to touch on with the art style that I think I may be overanalyzing, but I think it's underappreciated. If you look at it, everyone in this comic is there. What's the word I'm looking for? Not stereotypical. It's, I want to say the expected version of those heroes, but that's not the right way to say it. You know, like, what I mean?
Yeah, it's like the stereotypical superhero look.
Yeah, and it's all of them in some of the best art I think I've seen them drawn in, too. That's another thing. This is probably the best I've ever seen Spider-Man drawn in a not Spider-Man comic. You know, in the Avengers, even, he's not drawn that well, in my opinion. However, you guys may have differing opinions, but nonetheless, it only really, the main core of Spider-Man comics is where Spider-Man really gets dealt with this much respect and everything. And I feel like all the characters in this got more respect because they're there to pay their respects in a way. And I think that's why they're all in the best art that we kind of see them in their best form, as it were. I don't know. Am I overanalyzing there? Or you see what I mean?
I get what you're going at. It's just one of those.
I'm not stoned enough, man. I'm going to be perfectly honest right now on the podcast. I'm not stoned enough, so if I'm rambling, it's because I don't have any weed in me.
Okay. We are fine.
And the back issue's not condone the use of marijuana, but Dick lives in a state where it's allowed.
Yeah, it's legal up here in Seattle, so if you want to come smoke, don't
If you live in a legal state, please feel free to imbibe. If you do not, back issues does not condone.
It's illegal. Please don't do it.
Doing anything illegal.
Don't do it, damn.
That's our advice to you, is don't do anything illegal. Unless you're going to do it anyway and then be a fucking idiot. We don't care. But yeah, no, this is definitely, I can see why they continued with the Marvel graphic novel series after this. Because, honestly, this is one of the best fucking little comics I've read so far. Out of just everything that we've been reading for material, for the show, for that matter, it's just, I feel like this is really why they were like, okay, these graphic novels are a good idea. And that's why we get, you know, Doom and Strange. We get, you know, all these interesting storylines, these what-ifs in a way. Although,
well, they're not
canon.
What-ifs. They're in, yeah.
Oh, they're all canon? Okay, never mind. I thought they were what-ifs. That's even cooler.
All these are in continuity.
So these are basically like the big issues, basically.
Yeah.
Okay. So they just spin off the big issues into their own thing.
Except it's more like if somebody had a story to tell about a character, if it was big enough, they could get a graphic novel for it.
Yeah. And I really feel like, though, that by choosing Jim Starlin and Jim Shooter to tackle this project head on as the first project, they took a storyline that they didn't even know was going to be terribly successful, you know? Cancer is not an easy subject to talk about, no matter what it is. And yet they managed to not only do that, didn't this one sell pretty well as well?
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. And actually, I think they knew it would, because before that happened, DC had a success with a story. Not only did Marvel have a success with the Spider-Man storyline, where Harry Osborn is doing cocaine. Was it cocaine or heroin or something like that?
No, Harry Osborn was. I think it was. I don't remember. He was doing pills.
No, it was Harry Osborn, but I don't.
Yeah,
remember
he's
what
doing
he was
pills.
Doing pills.
Probably painkillers. Then I would assume.
I don't remember.
And then you had DC put out that thing, that whole thing with Batman deals with it.
No,
it
that was
with Batman's hatred of guns.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't remember the exact title of it, but.
And then you had the Green Arrow where Speedy was addicted to heroin, but I think that came later. But it was still all in the 80s.
Yeah. I actually think that Spider-Man movie was in the late 70s, wasn't it?
I don't remember.
I don't remember either. But yeah, you were starting this. I think this is why this was going to be successful, because you were start and you know, basically what Marvel a couple years earlier had thumbed their nose at the Comics Code Authority, saying we're going to run this without your approval, and then basically just kind of give a backbone to the industry just to go ahead and do things that they couldn't do before under the yoke of the code. And I think that's clearly why the 80s were such a revival for the comic book industry.
Yeah, I agree.
It really hadn't been what it had been in like the 40s and 50s.
True. I mean, and then you get like the goofy shit that came out under the code.
Oh,
like
God.
DC's out of continuity shit they put out, where Superman would spawn random powers and shit. Lois Lane.
Yeah, any book starring Lois Lane or Jimmy Olsen. Christ.
We are so better off without the code.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's just hope it's not going to make a comeback. I mean, let's.
Well, I mean, if DC gets desperate enough for money.
No, they'll just reboot everything again.
Yeah, seems to be their answer to everything lately. Yep, reboot.
New 53?
I think, honestly, when they rebooted New 52, they should have taken out alternate realities altogether.
Yeah, that's the thing about alternate realities. It does get confusing.
That's one of the things I don't like that Marvel does a little bit, is that you have all these alternate universes, but they manage to package it up in a neat little way where it's just like, that's a different Earth, which
it's a crutch.
It's a lazy excuse.
It's lazy, yes, exactly.
It keeps them from running over their own toes, unlike DC, who will constantly run into fucking walls and have to retcon shit and fucking series and shit because, well, that didn't work with the story we're going for now.
Retcon punch! Retcon punch!
I'm gonna get so mad that I punch reality.
Yeah. Yeah, Superboy Prime. That motherfucker has anger issues.
I'm just wondering what kind of physics it takes to actually punch reality itself.
Of Mach 700, I'm sure, and the rage of 10,000 nuclear bombs.
Not to mention 10,000 emo teenagers.
Yes.
And I'm thinking it's probably some acid.
A little bit. Not a whole lot, though. You want to trip only a little bit. It's mostly the nuclear force of punching reality that helps.
Yeah.
You punch a zero point, pretty much, and then it turns into a black hole.
Yep.
There we go. We figured out how DC does reboots. Bam. Post it to Facebook.
Hey, that's all we got to do. You get an angry kid to punch reality, and Jason Todd comes back to life.
The worst part is I'm sitting here punching the air. I'm like, how do you do this? Reality is everything. How do you punch everything? It's questions like this that wind up spawning monks.
Yeah.
That are spawning superheroes.
Or people in insane asylums.
Or respawning superheroes.
Jason Todd, the joke that keeps on giving.
Oh, God.
Funny enough, he was a lot more emo when he came back to life.
Oh, God, he's a whiny little bitch.
Yeah.
You abandoned me!
That must be the results of the retcon punch. It creates emo and everything, it returns to life.
Emo begets
emo.
So not only did he punch reality, he punched the bitch right into Jason Todd.
Oh, holy shit.
Oh, man. Welcome to Back Issues. We punch reality so hard that it brings people back to life. There you go. We've got a joke for this week. I fixed it. What happens if you punch reality with the Infinity Gauntlet?
Dude, that's dividing by zero. Don't do that.
Yeah,
that's basically dividing by zero. Oh, God. I mean, at that point, wasn't Thanos pretty much punching reality, though?
No,
he was reshaping it.
No, Infinity Gauntlet. You know, he has the Scream that punches reality. Remember?
Yeah.
Oh God, yeah.
Screams at reality and it creates a shockwave that rips up 25% of the universe.
Oh,
I guess we ought to introduce Thanos to Superboy Prime. No way, that'll destroy an entire universe. We don't want to do that on our universe anyway.
I say we retcon all of Thanos as he is right now and bring him back as, what's-her-face. I can't think of the name of the thrall he makes.
Oh, Taraxia?
Yes.
Yeah, she dies, after what, 5 pages?
Yeah,
pretty much.
She's a blip.
Yeah.
What's the saddest part about it is he made her in his image, and then she's fucking weaker. Like, come on, what the fuck? But anyway, getting back to Captain Marvel.
Right.
Overall, do you guys think they could have handled this in a different way, or how do you feel about the way that the whole everything was handled?
I think it was spot on, tone perfect, and everything.
I think it's one of the most depressing things I've ever read, and maybe that's why it's so good. Excuse me. Sorry about that, dogs. As I was saying, it was one of the most depressing things I've ever read, and yeah, it's given the tone of the comic. It's probably why it sticks with you so hard. I was really feeling, you know, down after reading the whole thing.
I still feel pretty fucking sad, and I just reread it a little bit ago.
I want to bring something up. The Captain Marvel has been brought back through A, having a son that was basically a half clone of him. Let's see, he was a Skrull during Secret Wars. He's come beyond the grave a couple times, but he is never outright. Well, wait, he did come back during
AVX. Yes.
No, not AVX.
Yeah, I actually read that he did come back briefly.
Yeah. To and then died. It's like there was the Chaos War.
Yeah.
My God, I hated that storyline.
It's gonna be one of those guys that shows up when the universe needs him,
and then goes back away. He's never been permanently, or even, you know, long-term, semi-permanently, been brought back to life.
Yeah, they're going to, those were, like, one of the three people that they thought would never get brought back, which was, one of them was Bucky Barnes. Yeah, Uncle Ben's Bucky Barnes, and... Actually, like, Gwen Stacy would never come back, but Gwen Stacy's back!
Spider-Gwen!
They've said that Gwen Stacy may not actually be back. It may be another clone.
No, my understanding is that she fell through a universe rip from another universe where Peter Parker is a lizard.
What?
I'm not making that up.
Well, put it this way. I know her current status quo is the one that we think might be her may turn out to be a clone. So they may be retconning the retcon of the retcon of the retcon ad infinitum ad nauseum.
When you get to that many retcons, though, maybe you should just reboot the entirety of everything with fresh IPs.
They tried that. It was called Ultimate Marvel.
Mm. Oh, and it just made it more confusing.
Actually,
because they couldn't resist getting the two crossover.
Yeah. If they'd kept them as separate things, I think it would have lasted longer than it did. But the fact is, the comic buying public wants to see the same Spider-Man, Iron Man, Captain America, Fantastic Four, etc., that they've been seeing their entire lives.
Yeah.
Which really makes innovation hard, which is why you get characters like this new
new Iron Man.
Yeah, taking over as Iron Man. Or yeah. Jane Foster's Thor. It's just because you run out of ideas.
And they have. I mean, let's be... I don't think I had a problem with... what was the name of this kid that became Spider-Man?
Miles Morales.
I don't think I have a problem with him. He has... They managed to give him a good story. Yeah. And, kind of like... like Peter Parker is like adopting him, you know, sort of. And so it's not like Peter Parker's gonna stop being Spider-Man. You know, it's gonna have just another Spider-Man running around, I guess.
Yeah.
And Miles Morales is a pretty well put together character. But, you know, it seems like, you know, now they figure they get away with it once. Let's see if we can get away with it with everybody, because now we've got a new Thor, now we've got a new Captain America, now we've got a new, well, now we got a new Iron Man.
They bitched out on Captain America, though, and brought him back anyway.
Yeah. Hail Hydra.
Hail Hydra. Yeah,
that went over so well. But, you know, it seems like, to me, you know, this is, again, a crutch they're losing because they're lazy. Or, you know, I don't want to get too into the politics, but there is, of course, the problem where you do have a lot of writers who are trying to put their ideology before the story, and that also comes through. You know, I don't want to get into detail, but, you know.
Well, the biggest thing is that ideology can drive a story well. It's just your story has to not be total fucking garbage.
That too. I mean, like we've said, we back in the 80s, they were able to take. That's the point. You look at the death of Captain Marvel, what we've been discussing here. It shows that you really can take a very sensitive subject and make a comic book out of it, and not come across as preachy or help me out here.
Ham-fisted, heavy-handed.
Thank you. And, you know, it's unfortunate, you know. All I do is look at this new Iron Man, and I'm thinking to myself, how is she going to hit that afro under that helmet?
That's a really good question, actually, though. There's going to be no room for her head inside of the helmet.
It's just going to be all hair.
It's going to be Hold on.
I want to submit an idea. The Iron Afro.
Oh, God!
No, see, because that sounds like that actually could be a fucking cool blaxploitation version of Iron Man.
I would watch that, to be honest.
Starring Mario Van Peebles.
Mario Van Peebles, there you go.
Write script, we can do this.
There you go.
Dolomite, motherfucker.
you bring in Angela Bassett to play Pepper Potts.
No, Pam Grier.
Oh, Pam Grier, even better. Thank you, Pam Grier, even better.
We need to write a treatment for this. I think we're sitting on a gold mine.
Oh my god, we could make so much money. Why doesn't Marvel hire us? We come up with better ideas than 90% of their staff. Damn.
That's probably why they don't hire us.
Oh,
they're not
really
looking for good ideas right now.
Oh, they're looking for money.
I don't find them too much of that either.
Oh shit.
But yeah.
One of the money, that's why they went to Hollywood.
You know, I have to fully admit something. I spent the last, almost hour trying to find a good cancer joke, but I just can't.
I mean, you have can't, sir.
Back puns? Issues. The only podcast where all of us probably have an enlarged prostate. There you go. Cancer joke for you. Bam. I'm on it. I'm on fire tonight. Look at this.
Oh, God. Oh, I know that joke gave me a tumor. No.
But yeah. Dear God, we're going to hell.
Probably.
We're so going to hell. I mean, it's kind of interesting to look at, even though they were technically in a vision state.
Mm-hmm.
And his memories. The amount of villains involved is just fucking amazing in this.
Yeah, it really is.
And it just goes to show how important of a character Captain America. Wow, look at me. I'm fucking up already. Captain Marvel is. Because, he's fought fucking everybody. I don't think there's a villain he hasn't fought that isn't a B or C tier villain. Yeah.
Well, let's be honest here. That was basically Marvel's Superman.
Yeah.
And you remember during the death of Superman, he got practically the same treatment. You know?
Yep.
So, you know.
And then they killed, all the respect that brought by doing Reign of the Superman. you know, having four different fucking Supermen running around. That was
was
less spoken of that, the better.
This just in, General Zod back from the dead.
Oh, God damn it. Don't do that to me. Please don't.
God damn it, Dick. That joke was malignant.
Okay, there's a legit cancer joke. I'm now satisfied. But I just keep looking at this cast, and I keep finding new characters that like me. Like, damn.
Let me just reach out to Marvel here for a second, real quick, though. Okay, Marvel, we used to love you. Please don't be afraid to actually tackle real issues and shit. Just don't do it in a way that makes everybody roll their eyes and want to vomit. Please.
Tackle issues, not politics, please.
No. Here's an example. Anything that was in Unbeatable Squirrel Girl, that's a bad idea.
Well, that was Squirrel Girl, which was just an abortion waiting to happen.
Oh, goddamn.
Ay, ay, ay.
I'm sorry, I couldn't help myself. I really hate Squirrel Girl.
So do I.
I didn't used to hate her. I didn't used to hate her until Unbeatable Squirrel Girl showed me the way.
Yeah, Unbeatable Squirrel Girl was just a steaming pile of shit, and still is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I like to look at this, and I like to look at the movies as kind of a light of hope that maybe there's something not busted at Marvel. Maybe. I mean, if you look at fucking Civil War, the first movie, that's a political thriller. That's not a superhero, in quotes, movie.
Yeah.
Why can't we do shit like that with fucking comics again now? Why does all these comics have to be all these fucking circle-jerky, self-serving, fucking feel-good shit?
I hate to say it, but right now, DC is doing right.
Which is just confusing the fuck out of me, to be completely honest. I don't know when
DC... And the strangest part is they're doing it via a reboot. Another fucking reboot.
Well, you know...
doing it right.
You know, if you keep shocking the cancer enough times, it'll go into remission.
Not if you have nega bands on.
Yeah, that's one thing we forgot to mention. It was the freaking nega bands that were kept in from getting healed.
No, we did. We talked about that. But
Nah,
like, Marvel, please. Please. When I have read so many good comics by you guys for this podcast. All of these good classics and shit. I know you guys used to be better than this.
Well, I don't know. Where is Stiltman? Trust me, it's a Daredevil villain.
And he is every bit as stupid as he sounds.
I don't even know who you're talking about. And
trust me, you don't want to know.
Just the name makes
cringe. Listen, there's a reason Daredevil fights Spider-Man villains now.
Yeah.
A Bullseye being the exception.
Oh, Jesus. Oh, God.
Doesn't even know who the character is, but knows it's disgusting and bad.
I can't
and we haven't even gotten to the Matador yet.
Oh, God.
Jesus Christ.
Oh, God. No.
Let us not forget Angar the Screamer.
Or the White Rabbit.
Oh, God. It's like you want me to cringe right now. I can feel my stomach coming out my anus right now from how hard I'm cringing. God.
Oh, dude, there's a superhero that's worse.
Oh, really?
Adam X, the Extreme. His superhero costume, he wore a backwards ball cap and had a bunch of, like, knives and shit.
That sounds like a fucking... Okay, just the name of the hero. Doesn't that sound like a DOS-era game with, like, ECG graphics or ECA graphics?
I don't know. I don't know, Jason. I gotta think that Arm Fall-Off Boy was worse.
That was DC, but true. Arm Fall-Off Boy was kind of cool. He could pull his arm off and club you to death with it.
Adam X the Extreme. Wow.
And it wasn't EX. It was X, you know, hyphen TREME.
Oh, God, that's even worse.
Would it be surprising if I told you this was a mid-90s creation?
I was just about to say, that makes perfect sense, actually.
That sounds like 90s as fuck.
Oh, God.
Did he wear neon?
Yes.
Oh, fucking hell. Why did I guess that right? No. I don't even have to fucking know about the character, and I already know all the fucking tropes and shit. Fuck, that's
what, was
bad.
He edgy
that
and angry,
writing.
Too? Was he edgy and
hold on a sec. I hate the fact that our listeners aren't going to be able to see this.
Oh, but God.
Just take a look at this motherfucker.
We can just put that picture underneath the bottom of the...
Trust me.
No, wow. Just trust me. Listeners, please go Google Adam X right now.
He is
oh
so
my God.
Edgy. Oh my
Jesus
God.
Jesus God Christ.
That is
guy makes
edgy.
Cable look like Mr. Rogers.
Dude, listen to this power, though. Adam can send an electric surge through oxygenated blood, which leads to ignition of the electrolytes present blood, causing a person to burn from the inside out.
Oh my
probably
God.
Probably in my skin.
Oh my God.
These wounds will not heal. The power is literally crawling in their skin.
Okay, this hero was as good of an idea as fucking Death Clock's death phones.
I apologize, Adam. Arm Fall Off Boy is fucking god tier compared to this joke.
Yeah.
Christ.
I think on that note, we're going to call this an episode.
Oh, yeah.
He's edgy Deadpool. No, he really is. He's edgy Deadpool.
Oh, wow.
I don't think you can make Deadpool edgy, but he is. If you look at his power list, please go. But seriously, go Google Adam X after this podcast or during the portion where we told you to. Because, oh, my God. Wow. Marvel, please stop.
Alright, this has been Back Issues. I'm Jamie. I'm Jamie.
Wow! Yeah, congratulations. You really have given him cancer.
I got brain cancer.
You see what 90s does to people? Third
I'm
degree,
Jason.
It's terminal.
You're Drayson?
I'm Jason, damn it. And with me has been Jamie Nick.
Hey, yeah.
Thanks for dealing with us.
You guys have a good night and don't get cancer, please.
Good night.